This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The equity crowdfunding space in Malaysia is stepping up momentum with 7 players operating actively. Funnel being the latest granted a license by Securities Commission Malaysia. Funnel is a Singapore-based private investment platform that allows investors to discover private market opportunities in unlisted companies and secondary unicorn shares, the likes of Elon Musk's SpaceX. And with me today to talk about their operations and the business model is...
Hi, I'm Kailin, CFO and co-founder of Funnel. So me and my co-founder started this company in 2015. How we started about it is then both my co-founders and me, we were working in investment banks. So as you know, investment banks are financial intermediary of this sort. You basically operate in terms of capital raising business. But traditionally, investment banks only cater to very large corporation. So large cap companies or closer to IPO, large M&As and so on and so forth. And we realized that at the same time when we have certain friends, some friends also left their jobs to actually start their own company, and they're also in the process of capital raising. And what we realized is that, you know, despite all this traditional financial intermediary, they have always been operating the large cap. What's stopping them from actually helping SMEs? And that's when we actually did a little bit of work and actually come to understanding that a lot of this traditional financial intermediary, the way they've been working on capital raising transactions has not changed the last 100 years. Mm. So they've always been focusing on working on large transaction, predominantly because they use human to do most of the work. As a result of the fixed cost structure of using human labor from end-to-end transaction, they could only cater to a certain transaction of certain size. They couldn't come down because the cost structure wouldn't work on a SME-type transaction. And that's when, of course, we analyzed international trends then and realized that, you know, a lot more people are actually using internet platform with internet penetration coming up, and how investors are looking at deals through our online platform and so on and so forth. We do realize that the way that we could actually make SME capital to actually enable a platform to work sustainably in the SME platform is to actually leverage on technology and data.
Mm-hmm. And there are various ways of and alternative ways of fundraising for an SME, especially with the boom of the internet, as you mentioned. What made you decide to go the route that Funnel has taken?
Got it. I think in the investment space, there are different type of instruments. I mean, traditionally, there has been debt instruments. Like if you need fundraising for a loan, you go to a bank, for instance. But as we see a lot of new age company where the gestation period is far longer, the non-brick-and-mortar type company, they will need more equity cap raising rather than debt cap raising. So rather than having a fixed interest and, you know, repaying, the R&D period much longer, and therefore equity type patient capital is actually more applicable to them. And that's actually why we focus only on equity and equity link instruments on our platform.
Mm. So tell me, how do you guys operate? Like, explain to me the process of how Funnel actually operates within this space.
Got it. So if you are a company that's looking to fundraise, what people do is they will come to us. And we have to date actually screened more than 3,000 companies.
Wow, okay. Around the world or in the region or in Malaysia and Singapore?
I mean, around the world. I would say that Southeast Asia in terms of companies is obviously from the highest volume. But we do get companies from all around the world as well.
Any types of industry verticals are these companies?
So right now, out of the 3,000 plus, about 60% probably have some tech angle into it. 40% are traditional businesses as well.
Right.
Traditional business do need equity as well for growth reasons, growth capital. If they need to do an expansionary, they have to execute their expansionary plans. That's when they actually require equity type capital.
So it's not necessarily has to be a tech company.
No.
So when they come up to you, what then happens?
Yeah. So we have our own proprietary algorithm. We call it Funnel Factor. We actually screen companies across financials, industry, commercials, the product itself, and traction. And by looking at all this, we actually score them. So if you're above a certain benchmark that we set, it varies from country to country. That's when we decide to move on to do further due diligence. Then when you the ratio is around, out of the 3,000 plus, only about 5% actually launch on our platform.
Why the very low number?
So ultimately, when we use the funnel algorithm to screen companies, only about 25% pass through the 10 benchmark. From 25 to 5, it can be down to, because after doing verification, there may be inaccurate information presented, or are we comfortable with after the numbers, so on and so forth, after we do some verification and due diligence on the company. Mm.
But with the first step itself, it goes down to 25% will then be screened again in your second process. So why do that 75% fail? What is the majority of that failure down to?
Yeah, so I think I'm explained because funnel factor rely on five type of criteria. There may be reasons where, let's say, you are a company from a far-flung country, maybe from Pakistan. Investor appetite for Pakistan companies are low, or there may be, because the management team are less experienced, lack of traction, or maybe too early stage. So there are a combination of reasons. There won't be one, only one, because of one reason, then therefore we reject. You may be, maybe from experience perspective, the management team are not as experienced as another company, but if the traction and financials are very good, then it's fine as well, because so it compensates for it.
You mentioned there are five factors that make up the funnel factor. So what are these five? The first one is the
financials.
All right.
Management team, industry, the product itself. So it tracks user growth, etc., operation stats. And the fifth is commercials. Commercials would be whether it's suited on our platform, given that predominantly our investor base are still more Southeast Asia.
Mm. And you also have to cater to your networks that, from my understanding, you've got 10,000 network of individuals who are angel investors, and then you've got firms as well who are backing you up in your network, right? What are they looking at? Because you also need to feed their hunger and, you know, what they want to invest. So what are they looking at? What's on their eye at the moment?
Yeah. Given that, you know, it's 10,000, there's not one single deal that they'll be looking at. Yeah. So different professional funds like VC and PE would have a very specific investment mandate. And therefore, the deals that we only give to them will be very specific to our mandate. Whereas angel investors, they are more varies in terms of which industry they are more interested in, where they are more familiar with. And therefore, they're willing to invest. So we capture all this profile as well when you sign up an account on our platform to actually gain access to private equity type opportunities. Mm.
When you started Funnel with your co-founder, what kind of challenges you faced? Because surely there was, you know, along the lines in terms of regulations and guidelines that is set by Singapore MAS, and you know, you now operate here in Malaysia as well, probably with the Securities Commission or Bank Negara. Were there difficulties in setting up Funnel in Singapore first?
Yeah, of course.
In 2015 as well, right?
Yeah. So I think we were quite lucky in a sense that because we started Funnel when actually a lot of regulators internationally, globally, are actually looking at how to tweak their current regulations to actually allow for online type, internet type platforms to work.
But they were keen already,
So 2015, Securities Commission has already started to seek consultation and actually started accepting application under their recognized market operator ECF framework. Mm-hmm. And that was the year that they started looking into it.
And then you got into it, and what was like the first hurdles when you know, decided to launch the platform?
Yeah. So I think first we got our license in 2015. We got our license in Singapore first. And at that point in time, I think the hardest thing that I assume that any startup would encounter, especially in financial services, would be trust and credibility, mm-hmm. right? Because we are new, how would a company come here and then trust that, you know, you'll be able to deliver results?
What
and
if
then,
you just close shop the next day?
Yeah, and the other hand, would be investors or the deals that they bring, are they legitimate or not? So I think from a trust perspective, that's something that is a hurdle that a lot of fintech companies do experience.
So how did you build that trust? Being an online world where, you know, you go online, there's no individual that you can talk to and feel like, yeah, you know what, I trust, my gut feeling tells me this. You could just set up a website that looks legit, but, you know, it's a scam at the end of the day. How do you build that trust?
Yeah, I think number one, the regulatory framework part, that would be extremely important. Being registered in Malaysia now, because we just entered Malaysia last year, and when we are registered with MAS, that helps a lot in terms of bolstering people's confidence in the platform. Mm-hmm. And then second would be track record. So over time, when we close more transactions on our platform, people gain more trust. So I would say that the initial startup phase to garner that amount of investors is slower. But now, of course, with a bigger reach and better brand awareness, better understanding of what we are offering up to companies and investors alike, it has become easier over time. But there's no shortcut to it. There's no like one day I woke up and then, you know, it's all done. And then people suddenly have some trust and credibility. It's built slowly over time. As with any financial institution, traditional financial institution or fintech per se, like the reputation part would be a very important thing to build on at the early stage, especially on the early stage of how you do due diligence, for instance, etc.
Were there anything changed in the number of years from 2015 until now in the way that you operate or the way that you reach out and build this trust? Or was it just perseverance, just keep at it, keep doing what you're doing?
Yeah, I think we along the time, we also started adding different products onto our platform because we realized the technology from from getting companies on and from distribution of all these securities, it can be actually enable and allow us to distribute other type of products. So when we first started, we only help company fundraise and for investors to invest in directly into the company. I think last year we started launching 3 funds on our platform. So we have done 3 funds as well, and they're all reputable funds in the region. And that also helped bolster confidence, because if funds come to us to fundraise, then what's stopping companies to come to us to fundraise as well?
Right.
Earlier this year and late last year, we also started looking at secondary transactions. Secondary transaction meaning that the money doesn't go directly into the company, whereas you're just helping existing investors or employees to monetize their shares in a private company.
So along the way, there were small little changes, and especially, you know...
Yeah, add on. I would say
adding on.
Yeah, keep adding on. And because I guess alternative investments generally... occupy about 10% of everyone's portfolio, right? So it's not like a 90... If your portfolio is 90% private equity and VC, I think it will be quite risky from that perspective. 10 to 20, right? So it's a small percentage. As a result, adding all these different products will enable us to actually make the network effect better.
I'm speaking to Sun Kai Lin. She's the Chief Financial Officer at Funnel. And we'll continue in just a moment. BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and more. BFM 89.9.
This is Tech Talk, and on the show with me today talking about equity crowdfunding space is Sun Kai Lin. She's the Chief Financial Officer at Funnel. And early on, Kai Lin, we spoke about how Funnel came to life and the trust that you've built now that you have your investors and networks. Is there a success story that shows how well you've done with Funnel?
I think there are plenty. So I think for us, we always pride in terms of efficiency, effectiveness, as well as price discovery. So, I mean, traditionally, companies that want to fundraise in the traditional method, basically knocking door to door, or having your friends to recommend second and third degree connection to actually fundraise from an equity perspective, which is extremely slow process.
Mm-hmm.
The part that using us to gain access instantly to family offices, institutional angel investors, whatnot, is a very good example of how technology could help you reach that goal faster and cheaper. And the most successful case on our platform, actually a company was launched on our platform, actually got more than 10 term sheets. So if you were to get that 10 term sheet, you probably have to meet 30, 40 investors to get the 10 term sheet. And to do that, normally or usually, you have to really go slow, right? So by recommendation, et cetera, to actually reach there. But we could reach that goal pretty quickly. Enable price discovery, because with the different term sheet, you might choose one that's suitable in terms of looking at investor profile, looking at terms on the term sheet, which is more suitable for the company itself.
Now, the different forms of investments, like your equity, you've got convertible bonds, you've got unicorns as well. Like, can investors sort of choose the investments they prefer, or do you advise them in terms of what's best for them? How does that go about?
On our platform, we don't advise on which type of deal that's good for you, for instance. We believe that, you know, investors would need to be solely educated in terms of the type of transaction or companies they can relate to. If, for instance, I'm big on marine conservation or space discovery, right? And you tend to actually have more knowledge in that sector, and therefore able to make a quicker assessment as to whether this company is good or not good.
Mm.
With that background, as with investing even in public markets, that's the same. Shouldn't be investing blindly, but you definitely have to do your own due diligence and whatnot to actually look at that sector. And then the company itself, whether the company is positioned for success in that specific sector.
Mm. And platforms like yours, have existed in the past few years now, have also, made a lot of people who are probably not investors or angel investors before interested to get into this space, because previously maybe they were playing in different industries, whether it's buying properties and stuff like that. How do you go about in educating them to understand, like, there's a difference when it comes to investing in companies, and especially you're probably helping out with SMEs that have a longer run and so forth? How do you go about in educating them and understanding the risk that is involved?
Yeah, so I think a lot of, I would say, platform-based investing, especially in the alternate space, right? The other players, when they market about this, help actually us as well, because it's about educating this asset class, right? And then second will be industry trends. I think if you can look at just general stats, right, regionally, especially in Southeast Asia, the number of IPO and whatnot has already in decline. And a lot of the returns and value are actually stuck in the private sector.
Mm.
And that's when you get a higher delta. But of course, the higher delta comes with higher risk. And all this global trend actually help, because as the more exciting companies and whatnot are actually in existence in private but not in the public markets, more and more people are also looking at it. So one would be external macro factors. And second would be individual players, including, competitors of likes or other platforms in this region, actually help us also, because generally the awareness of the general public is not there. So anyone that come up to market or explain this asset class definitely help us as well.
Mm. Is the IPO dream dead? Because, many years ago, one would start a company and the dream is to, get it to IPO. But now, as you mentioned, not many people are taking that route. What's your take on the IPO route?
For IPO, I don't think it's that is dead. It has its own pros. It has its own exit for, as in the goal to IPO is still there for a lot of people. Just that a lot of people are thinking of doing it later rather than earlier, given that there's so much activity in the private capital markets. Second would be from a valuation perspective, we do see listed companies that are having and drawing much better valuation in other jurisdictions, maybe not Southeast Asia, but in US and Hong Kong, for instance. So it's not exactly date, but just that the gestation period to go IPO has become longer. Yeah.
One of the things that attracted me when I was looking at the email pitch was that you can now, invest in companies like SpaceX. How did you actually manage to get, open the doors to companies like SpaceX? You've got also Vickers Ventures partners as well on board. And these are companies that are outside of, Singapore and also in the region. How do you manage to get them to be part of your, the doors that, us investors could tap into?
Got it. So I think first would be our value proposition to all these companies or funds. So Vickers is a fund itself. And number one would be that speed and access. So our speed to market is much faster rather than, like I explained earlier, if you were to do this on a door-to-door basis, you'll get it on a very slow pace.
Mm.
And second would be our network value and distribution network, right? With 10,000 investors on our platform, it's definitely far easier to go through us. Again, back to comparing to a traditional model like investment banks per se, that's how it worked, right? In traditional investment bank, you go through a platform because you have it's economies of scale and network effect that they have given the investors they're dealing with. And same here, it's just that it's in the private side.
And now you're operating here in Malaysia. How are you trying to get people from Malaysia on board? Are you trying to use the same kind of methods you've used in Singapore? Are there similarities or is there some unique approach for...
Yeah, I think we are still trying out various lead acquisition plans here, and let's see how it goes. So in the process of still testing it out here as well.
And what are you looking forward to in 2019? Are you looking to expand to different regions, different countries around the region, or are you trying to, you know, create new solutions or new services, adding on? Because it is an evolving space.
Yeah, definitely. So we are looking at growing to other part of Southeast Asia. So now we are in Singapore, Indonesia, Australia, now Malaysia. We are looking at other parts of Southeast Asia. And second, also creating more interesting solutions for people. For instance, the Funder Factor, we are rolling out to other financial intermediaries to test run them this year.
I've been speaking to Seng Kai Lin. She's the Chief Financial Officer at Funder. And we've been talking about their business model and how they operate in the equity crowdfunding space. If you miss any parts of this show, you can download the podcast. It's available on the BFM website, or better yet, get the BFM app. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and this has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.